Hello and welcome to the Mystic Cast, where you join Jack Stafford and Deborah Littleboy, members of the Aetherius Society, the cosmic religion for the Aquarian Age, as we break down the barriers between religion, science, metaphysics, philosophy, and mysticism, all of which are really only aspects of the self-same quest for truth. Please note this is an independent program not produced or fact-checked by the Aetherius Society. Today, our guest is Ella Labane. Hello, Ella.
Hi, Jack. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you, and we see a lot of... a lot of overlap between our beliefs and yours. Mostly our audience is Aetherius Society members. When you first heard about the society, when you've been in touch with Deborah, what are your thoughts?
Oh, well, I was introduced to the Aetherius Society in the 80s, 1980s.
Oh, wow. You go way back.
In New York City, because that's where I'm from. So when I was working there, I worked, and across the street, there was a bookstore. And I used to just spend my lunch hours absorbing as much as I could, books and, you know, all the philosophy. I was fascinated with it.
And so which book did you read first?
Well, I didn't actually read like cover to cover. I used to go in on my lunch hour and just like look things up. So that's how I got introduced to it. But let's see, I think Blavatsky comes to mind a long time ago, but it was definitely part of my journey and research into, you know, the world of philosophy and spirituality and seeking truth.
Yeah, well, it's the oldest international UFO organization. And Dr. King has been at it since the 1950s. He was, you know, they did the first march in England. Is that right, Deborah? To promote the awareness of aliens, of UFOs, and
I think he did the first march to actually warn us about using atomic power and the bomb. So that was like the big march. But yeah, he was. Speaking on radios and television right the way through the 1950s and traveled around the world again and took a lot of ridicule, as you can imagine, at that time that wasn't as widely accepted as it is today. And I wouldn't say it's really until the last few months hasn't really been widely accepted in the world until we've had sort of like US come out and declare that they've known about UFOs for a while.
7 years.
Yeah, it's been a great time. Yeah. Exciting for all ufologists.
Was he in the movie Farewell, Good Brothers? Because that was all about the 1950s contactees. And I seem to remember seeing... It's a really good film. It's a documentary, but it's all about that era of the early contactees and the UFO sightings and what they were receiving. And I kind of remember that I think he was involved. He might have been mentioned or in there, but that's, you know, takes us back to the original grouping that kind of started all, you know, flying saucers. And now they don't call it that anymore. Now, and it was UFOs and now it's UAPs. Yeah. So it doesn't really matter, you know, how many times they change the name. It's still the same phenomena.
Yeah. So let's get on to you then. You have proof that Star Wars and Star Trek are fact-based. And you're all about identifying all the different extraterrestrials and the interdimensional beings. I mean, you've been doing this for 25 years now.
Well, I kind of got into it in the 90s, and that's, you know, when I became a researcher. I'm a retired paralegal, so I basically took my skill set and applied it to ufology and seeking the truth about who is who in the cosmic zoo, I call it. So, you know, about Star Trek. So my whole thing is the truth is stranger than fiction. So when we go into these science fiction movies and genres, there's always truth in there. And And I've gone back and forth, you know, trying to figure out like which came first, you know, the chicken or the egg kind of thing, you know, like which came first. Did the science fiction writers actually get their material directly from these sources, or did they, or are they prophetic? Okay. And I kind of think a little bit of both, to tell you the truth, because there's several filmmakers here in the United States that we know, and I've published this, have actually been given scripts. Okay. And so back to the 1950s. So in the 1950s, when all this was kind of emerging, a group called Majestic 12, which were 12 of the top Navy Admiral Generals of the Army here. Okay, so you know, here, the hierarchy, the Navy is the top of the military. So they kind of make all the decisions. And because of what happened at Roswell in 1947, they had to figure out how they were going to control the information. And they knew, practically speaking, that there was going to be leaks, that people were going to come out and say stuff. But they knew, because they had tested the public several times, like War of the Worlds was just one of those tests, that the public wasn't ready to receive the information about the aliens, the alien presence, and they themselves weren't 100% sure about what they were dealing with. So the decision was they had to keep it secret, and it was top national security, top secret stuff. But because of the practical, you know, thinking, they thought, okay, well, we know that we're not going to, because it's like what you resist persists, we're not going to be able to keep the lid on this. So what we can do is manipulate the information. So they would give certain stories, okay, that happened, and they would literally like leak it, you know, purposely to what back then was considered, still today, not credible sources, which were tabloids, like, you know, the National Enquirer, and, you know, in England, you've got the Sun and all this type of stuff. And then people wouldn't take it seriously, okay? They would see these stories sandwiched between all this kind of, you know, lies and deception.
Like Men in Black. There's that scene in Men in Black where he...
Exactly. And that's another one.
From the...
Yes. And they put that in there for a reason. That was a deliberate script, because that is the truth. That's exactly what goes on. So people who are in the know, they know that. That's why they went for the tabloid in the movie, because that's what goes on with the in the world of the secret agents and stuff. So this was a decision that was back in the 50s. And so they've continued doing that, and they were giving scripts to certain writers. Now, I have evidence, history, you know, reports of Gene Roddenberry, okay, who obviously was the creator of Star Trek, as you all know. And he yes, you read my stuff. Okay, so The Only Planet of Choice by Phyllis Schlemmer. I got to meet her. Okay,
did you?
I did. She came here to Colorado in 1997, I think, and she's passed now. But she would do these channeling sessions of the Council of Nine, and Gene Roddenberry used to go to her channeling sessions every week. Okay, that was like his thing. All right. So of course he got information, he took notes, he was inspired. And, you know, Deep Space Nine, which is another one of the Star Trek the series, didn't actually get published until after he passed. But they used all his notes. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that is another very big piece of how things, you know, got into this, you know, what the world of science fiction. But back to Gene Roddenberry and his association with military. That's what I was about to tell you. So he had relationships with these two admirals, okay, Boda and Rocha, and they were literally, you know, they were friends, okay? And they were working on what we call today the secret space program, okay, which was going on since World War II. So, you know, in times of war, the victors get the spoils of when they win the war. So what was the big spoil, you know, the big reward, the big kahuna, so to speak, of World War II was the Nazi alien technology. That's what created the Cold War. So the Russians and the Americans were allies and they collaborated. And so the Nazis had already established a base in Antarctica called New Schwabia Land, and they were there from 1930s, okay? So when the Americans and the Russians got the spoils, they went to Antarctica and they worked together in this joint base. And that was the best place on the planet to keep it secret because nobody goes to Antarctica. And even today, you can't get to Antarctica without special clearances and special permits and all this stuff. I mean, it's a whole rigmarole. You have to be part of, you know, military or research or science, and it's a whole thing. So basically, they were developing, and not just in Antarctica, that's just where the Nazi base was, but they've been developing it, reverse engineering, which is what came out in our Congress this summer, the big disclosure whistleblower, David Grush, who basically said, yes, we have been reverse engineering alien technology. There's been multiple crashes and multiple bodies. And, you know, like people like me, you know, it's like, oh, finally, it's coming out. It's not a shock because we've known about this for years. But everybody else is like, whoa, when? Hey, you know, and so they're still, you know, dealing with the aftermath of that here. Okay, it's not over yet. And the next wave is coming of the next group of whistleblowers. So we're going to even get more. And we're in what we call drip, drip disclosure. Okay, so we get maybe like a big drip, which we had in at the end of July by the whistleblowers, but we're going to get an even another layer of it. Okay, so I'm connecting dots here to not only America, but Israel. Okay, so if you remember the news in November, December of 2020, of course, everybody was under the pandemic, and that's when easy for this stuff to slip right through, right? So Chaim Eshed, who was the retired space chief of Israel's top national security space program, I mean, he was like the big kahuna. So 88 years old, octogenarian, and this is a pattern. We're seeing this, okay, because we had William Tompkins, also not an octogenarian, who decided it's time to blow the whistle on all this, and then he died. It was like he gave it all. He wrote his book. He went to MUFON Symposium. They named their symposium 2017 after him, which was the Secret Space Program, spilled the beans. 1 month later, we had this big solar eclipse here. Remember the big toting solar eclipse in August of 2017? And he died, natural causes, early that morning, 90 years old. So I'm just connecting dots here that these octogenarians feel like they have to let this stuff out. So that's the same thing that happened. Now, Chaim Eshed is still alive, but he gave this story to Israel's equivalents of like our New York Times, the Yedidot Ahronot, and he basically spilled the beans. And he said that the United States and Israel, see, this is what I call the real Star Wars. The United States and Israel have been in contact with the Galactic Federation, okay? They're working with them. They're working together. They're in agreements, okay? Working agreements. And the Galactic Federation feels that us, the public, are not ready to learn about them, to know about them. So they're going to keep it. But that's what he said. And not only that, here's another little cherry caveat. And Trump knows all about it. Okay. So, of course, that was like a quake that went around the world for people who are paying attention, because it was right in the pandemic. Okay, November and December of 2020. And of course, that was the end of Trump's administration, because January of 21, there was an administration change. But basically, the disclosure movement happened under Trump's tenure, which began December 16th of 2017, which we call Disclosure Day, which was this coordinated effort here by the media sources and ATIP and the Stars to the Stars Academy, and they deliberately did it on a Saturday because they knew that, okay, well, you know, not everyone's paying attention to the news on Saturday. They're on a weekend. But that's when it all started to quake. So
now can I cut in before we lose the thread on something that's really precious to my heart? Go back to the book I held up, The Only Planet of Choice. And I've had that book before I even knew about the Aetherius Society. And one of the people that used to sit in circle with Jean was a man called John Whitmore. And I met John Whitmore just before he passed. I was working with a charity, and John was headed up for that charity. And what I found from before I'd even met John, had Alzheimer's, was in a home. So when I met him, it was, as I say, towards the end of his life. But what we got from that book and what my colleagues had found from John is that they were told that they had to hold the light, had to anchor the light, and they had to be in certain places at certain times, like given via Phyllis, to hold, just keep the planet stable. And a lot of the times, so they were traveling all around the place, and they had to go to Russia, but they went to Israel a lot. So Israel was stabilized in part, according to my sort of view, information, by these people that had were acting on this channeled information through Phyllis. And when we look back, it's almost like you see a conflict coming up, and then you go back in history, you can see a conflict coming up, and then you see from here that they were sent in, and then it was sort of settled off a little bit. And I just find that fascinating, but more so because since I've come into the society, that's sort of like, that's what the ascended masters do. That's what the higher intelligence, the space people do to balance us, like kids in the playground having a punch up. It's the teacher that sort of comes in and smooths it out. Otherwise, we, you know, be in a terrible mess. Now, with all that preamble, have you got anything to add to that stabilization process from when you've been doing your research? Anything through Jean or Phyllis that collaborates with what I've just said?
Well, I mean, Phyllis was Jewish. Okay, so the connection to Israel was real. And, you know, as every Jewish person is connected to Israel in some way or another. So what I loved about her work, which I kind of extracted and quoted in my first book, was the origin. And this is, I'm so glad you asked this, because this is so relevant to what's happening right now on the planet with the rise of anti-Semitism, was that the origin of the Jewish people were actually, she called them Huvids, okay? Yeah. That they were the Huvids, and they came from Atlantis, okay? And they were extraterrestrial race, an extraterrestrial seed, okay? So this goes back to what Chaim Eshed said, because I'm actually publishing this blog on this right now, so it's very relevant that we're talking about this, because it's happening, okay? So Chaim Eshed said that the Galactic Federation feels that we're not ready. And after what just happened on October 7th in Israel, which was a massacre that they haven't seen since the times of the Holocaust, the most cruelest, evilest stuff that was done to these people. And I'm not even going to mention it, because you can look it up, okay? But this kind of racism, anti-Semitism is racism. This kind of like, we're going to wipe you out. We're going to take you off this planet. We don't want you here. Goes way back. Okay. It's an extraterrestrial war. Okay. Between extraterrestrial races who have seeded on this planet. So talking about those who keep things in balance, okay? Well, there's also the king, okay? So, you know, I always tell Americans here, oh, we don't think in terms of kingdoms anymore because we broke away from the monarchy, but I don't have to tell you guys that because you're from there, right? So you understand the consciousness of kingdoms. And that's how the ancient world worked. And that's how these beings continue to operate within kingdoms. And what we have is a clash between two main kingdoms here. Okay. So the end time war. Okay. So they make jokes about Jewish space lasers. Okay. Star Wars stuff. Okay. And they, you know, the Iron Dome and all of that. But they've got some really sophisticated technology going on there, okay? That the whole world is going to end up seeing in this final battle, and because it's the same battle, just a different century. I mean, history repeats itself. Why? Because people don't learn its lessons, because we don't evolve. So why did the Galactic Federation say we're not ready to know about them? Because of the hatred that continues to perpetuate on this planet. Because who's to say, first of all, the Jews, just as you call them, they're like the canaries in the gold mine. Okay. Jewish people, it's like, remember, you know how they stick the canary in the gold mine? And if the gas is so bad, the canary comes out dead, and then they know not to go in there. Well, the Jews are like the canaries in the gold mine, because what they've done to the Jews, which was an extraterrestrial race, these ETs are not revealing themselves to us because they know, well, look what they're doing to the Jews. What do you think they're going to do to us? They're not ready to accept us. They can't even accept each other. Okay.
Yeah. I think Jacqueline might want to come in on this, but so our teachings take us along that line that they can't land because we're not ready. And so we have to prove that we're ready because we have to stand on our own two feet. And that actually means that we don't go setting off bombs. And it actually means that we don't go stabbing each other. And it means that we all play together nicely. And then we can bring in the higher technologies to be used for good and not for killing and for blowing up and for all those dreadful things. And as you've said, we came to this planet, we blew up the first civilization that we had here, Lemuria. We reformed to Atlantis. What did we do? We blew it up. We come out of the slime, we climb our way up again, we discover the how to explode the atom, and everybody wants to press the button. So we haven't, you just haven't learned enough to be given higher tech, which can be good, used for good or used for not good. And if the more power you have, the more responsibility you have to have in using it. But what I do find interesting is that your information on the Intergalactic Council, which we don't have in our teachings, we have Interplanetary Parliament, which is the system in our solar system. It's the hierarchy of our solar system. So somebody asked me to talk about the difference between Intergalactic Parliament Council, and I couldn't because I don't really understand what the
hierarchy
might be. You know, I don't really understand where that comes from. I do know the hierarchy of the solar system because it's been given to us quite definitely and in easy language for Deborah to understand. Thank you. So that's our step out of this mess we've got ourselves in through the solar system, and then beyond. Yeah, in the words of a Buzz Lightyear. But it's fascinating that you're coming from it from a your research is from like almost like a historical pattern.
Yes.
Yeah, and I get that perfectly. Yep. What I'm trying to do is find those threads that link the truths as from our teachings, which I'm totally behind, and find where they all join. So,
well, the Earth is where things kind of come together. Like the star. The six-pointed star, one is going to the heaven and the other triangle is going to the earth. And it's all going to meet here. This is our sort of galactic meeting. There's a divine appointment that is written down in the prophecies that are so accurate. I mean, to this very day, as you and I speak, we have just seen the fulfillment of another one of these. It's almost like a script that they're following for the end times. But let me just address something you said about the council, the intergalactic council. So it does, you can call it many different things, okay? Like there's different words. So back in the 90s, when I was starting out on this path of research, I met this whistleblower, and he's published in my book, my first book, Who's Who in the Cosmic Zoo. And his name was Colonel Donald Ware. Retired Air Force, still alive in his 90s, living in Florida. Anyway, he basically came out and said, we have UFOs, we've seen UFOs. And him and I worked together for a little bit, and he told me that the ETs told him, and I never forgot it. So I wrote it down and I published it, that the ETs told him that there will come a time on our timeline on this planet where the United Nations are going to get transformed, similar to what you would call the United Federation of Planets, which is the Star Trek model. Okay, so you called it like Intergalactic Council. Call it whatever you want. It's kind of all the same, very similar thing. And why is that going to happen? Because we're going to go through disclosure, which we're in. We are in disclosure. It's unfolding. It's drip, drip disclosure, but it's disclosure. And at some point, I call it the alien presence. And the reason why it's a presence is because they're already here, okay? And they've been kept secret and hiding. And our governments know about, because they're interacting with them, they're in agreements with them, documented agreements, legal agreements, okay? I published all this, okay? It goes back to President Eisenhower, okay? So this is all within the documentation of ufology. This is not, channeled stuff. This is stuff that's really already happened and is happening. And there are people that are working with them. And that was William Tompkins. He was one of them, the octogenarian I told you about, who blew the whistle on the secret space program, because he was working. He was like a lifelong engineer, and he got discovered for his gifts. He was, I had this photographic memory, and he was able to like look at something and draw it in such precision detail. And they discovered him in World War II. In England and in Germany, when they sent him to go look at the German shipyards, and he would come and draw this in such precision. So they recruited him, and he was a lifelong engineer. So he got all the way up to the top, and he was in the control room during the Apollo 11 moon landing, which really did happen. I met the Apollo astronauts, okay, and I worked with some of them in Starfest in 2019, and they're very real, and they're very down to earth, and they really did go to the moon multiple times, okay, just for your audience, because I know there's a lot of moon deniers out there. So what did they see, and why was it covered up, and why was there so much controversy? Is because they succeeded beyond their imagination. Not only did they get to the moon, but they found the aliens, okay? And they were greeted by this fleet of ships on the crater. That was the reason why Neil Armstrong had to manually land the craft, because of they weren't expecting a welcoming committee, but it was basically this whole fleet of ships that were lined up along the crater. William Tompkins was in the control room. There were two feeds, the public feed and the private NASA mission control room feed, and that's where he was, and he drew it. He drew exactly what came up on the screen. I published it in my book. It's published. It's out there. So what did he see? Not only the ships, but there were 9 foot tall lizard men standing next to their ships as Apollo 11 landed on the moon. This was the big secret. This was what they were covering up. And they let all these crazy conspiracy theories go out there because it confused everybody. It was an obfuscation because they didn't, this was the big secret. Okay. So they've been in contact with multiple, I mean, we have whistleblowers. There's 57 different species that have been in that we, you know, like military have been in contact with. And the UK is not silent on this, even though they are silent by keeping it secret. But I mean, we have Nick Pope, who's come over to our side now, who used to be your defense, one of your defensemen, and he's basically become a whistleblower because it was his job to cover this stuff up for the Ministry of Defense in the UK. So we know that the US and the UK and Israel and Russia have all been working together on this. Okay, this was the cover of the Cold War was communism, obviously, but what was happening underneath was the secret space program. So they've been taking alien tech, reverse engineering it, and building a fleet of intergalactic spacecraft, okay, where they have the ability to traverse galaxies, okay? So this is the real Star Wars. And what are they waiting for? Well, they're waiting for the conflagration, World War III, end time prophecy, Armageddon, if you will. That's like a script. And the Middle East, they're following it just like a script. The prophecy is written like a script. They name names. And the only difference is that a few of the countries have changed their names, but they're still the same geographic location. Like, for instance, ancient Persia is today's Iran. Ancient Timon is today's Yemen. You know, Put is Libya. Lebanon. Meshek and Tubal is today's Turkey. So all of the names that are written in Ezekiel chapter 38 and all these the prophecies are literally coming true, where they all go after Israel. Why? Okay, so I studied with Zachariah Sitchin for years. He's passed now. May he rest in peace. But he basically carved out this whole field of research that no one had done before in his 12 books called The Earth Chronicles, which was his translation and interpretation of the ancient Sumerian cuneiform tablets and the ancient scripts. And basically, what he determined was that, you know, there was these ancient aliens and they came and they built these temples, and the temples were basically spaceports. So when they left, the humans built temples around it, and they started worshiping because these were gods. They considered them, you know, from outer space. So one of the big ancient space portals that's still an ancient space portal is Jerusalem. And that is why the prophecy says that Jerusalem becomes a burden stone for all the nations of the world. And you can list this whole long litany of every grouping, including, you know, England was the last before the Balfour Declaration and the United Nations decision to give it to the Jews, okay, as a solution for the problem in World War II. But world wars are connected. World War I was connected to World War II, and World War II is absolutely connected to World War III, which we're in. Okay, so they want to undo what they did. That's basically.
Yeah, what we have in our teachings is that World War III or Armageddon has actually already been fought, but on the lower astral realms. And what we've got now is almost like echoes of it. So like the aftermath of any war. What we've also got, I'm just sort of throwing this in so that we've got the... So what we're also told is that there was a space station on, they call it Luna, so the moon. There was a space station on there. And we were not allowed by Interplanetary Parliament. So the Perfects of Saturn said that we on Earth were not allowed to go to get a spacecraft or onto any planet or anywhere until they sort of cleared up stuff. And then what happened is that the, jump in when I get this wrong, Jack, but the solar system took a initiation, but basically all their vibrations rose. So they went to a higher vibratory rate, which meant that even if we went to Mars or wherever it was, we wouldn't see anything. We would not be able to glean any information because we weren't at a higher higher vibratory rate because Earth wasn't ready for it.
Well,
at that stage, we were then, it was lifted that we could do our space travel. So this is 1969. And then we did the first space race and we got to the moon. And what we were told, well, not told, but that they would have seen some of these like plastic or settlements or that there will be evidence of people there.
Yes. And that's exactly what we have seen. And there's a lot of documentation about it. I have pictures, videos I have posted of the cities on the moon. You know, NASA did a test in 2011 where they sent a bomb to explode on the moon, and it rang like a bell. And they determined, this is all documented, you can look this up, and they determined that the moon had to be hollow and made out of some metal in order for that to happen, that it wasn't like an Earth-type planet. It's a satellite. And really, all the cities and everything are under these domes, in these craters, and they're underground. But we also went to Mars. Okay, and I have 14 whistleblowers that I have listed in my first book on the Mars jump room. I mean, they've been playing around and experimenting with time travel technology since the Philadelphia experiment, okay, in the 1940s, which evolved into the Montauk experiment, which evolved into Project Pegasus, which evolved into the Mars jump room, where they literally went into an elevator and they ended up on Mars. I mean, there's like 14 whistleblowers who experienced that. Okay. Andrew Basiago, and one of them, you know, they all claim, and of course he's never admitted to this, but this is part of the story. Can't ignore this. Every one of them claimed that Barry Satoru was amongst them. Okay, because his mother was one of the coordinators, because her father was a lifelong CIA agent, so they kept it in the family. And who is Barry Satoru? Well, most people know him as Barack Obama. He was our president in 2008 and 2012, and they time traveled. And this happened in 1980. He was 18 years old, and they time traveled, and they hit the wall in 2012. They couldn't go beyond 2012 from 1980. And they saw a black president, and they figured it must be him. So he was groomed from that point on to be president. So this is all our history over here, but he knows this has all been covered up, okay? But that there's, you know, it's very hard to keep secrets because people come out and there's leaks and there's whistleblowers and there's all this stuff that we talked about at the beginning. And the Majestic 12 knew this. They foresaw that this was going to happen. So they deliberately would give certain, because there's parts of them, they're human just like us, that believe that we need to know what's going on. And every single whistleblower that comes out has that. It's, I have to tell people. I can't hold this in. Neil Armstrong, like he died with his secrets because he was threatened. He had a divorce and he didn't spend enough time with his kids. And they said, they had all the benefits. And they said, if you blow the whistle on your deathbed, we're going to go after your family. That really did happen. So that's why he never said anything. Okay. So this is like a constant battle here. But the point is that the aliens are already here. Great invasions happen in secret. Some of them never even left the planet. Okay. And this is what's been covered up, is that they've been living with us underground. The Earth is the home to 11 different dimensions. Okay. So, you know, the Bible talks about the three levels, you know, the place of the dead. People get buried. They go into Sheol. Then there's like different levels of hell. There's heaven, Abraham's bosom, paradise inside the earth. This was evidenced in the story in the book of Luke, where there was a chasm between them and they saw each other, but they couldn't touch each other. Okay. Michio Kaku, one of our leading physicists, came out with the guard particle. And he also said that there's, through physics, they determined this, that there were 11 dimensions to Earth. Well, the ancient books of Enoch talks about the 10. You add the third dimension that you and I are talking in right now, and that makes 11. So the surface is the third dimension. What's going on under our feet? You know, Henry David Thoreau said, heaven is above us as well as under our feet. This is not a new concept. It's written in the ancient scripts. It's in religions. So it's not just about heaven. It's about these other areas of the earth. The earth is caverned out. We know that there's an ocean inside the earth. We know that there's a sun inside the earth. We know that there's ancient breakaway civilizations. So every time, like you, when you were talking about Lemuria and Atlantis that went down. So one of the things that is in Plato was that Atlantis not only sank, but it also left because it was like a mothership. Okay, so we come full circle, okay, to the age of Aquarius. The last time we had a processional age of Aquarius was during the ancient civilizations of Atlantis, okay? 26,000 years ago. And we are at the end of the age of Pisces right now, astronomically speaking. People will say we're in the age of Aquarius because there's a bleed over from the age to come into this, because we're transitioning. Okay, so we're getting a little of both, almost like I like to explain it like when people look at the horizon in the morning, an hour before sunset. And as soon as you see the first light, everything gets a little purpley and it's just a light, but there's no sun yet. And it takes about an hour for the sun to actually come up above the horizon. We're in that space, you know, like relatively speaking from the processions. So astronomically speaking, we're at 3 degrees of Pisces. The processions go backwards. So we go 3, 2, 1, 0. And the way the astronomy works is it's 0 to 29, not 1 to 30, but there's 30 degrees. So when you're at zero, that's the switch. Okay. And that's the end of this age, this processional age that the prophecies say all this is going to come to a head. The final battle over Earth, who gets to rule the Earth, which kingdom is going to win. Okay. And these are extraterrestrials. So back to, I don't know, I sent you my chapter about the real Star Wars and how Jediism and Judaism has all these connections. And we don't know if George Lucas did this purposely or just, you know, pulled, because when these science fiction writers put stuff together, they pull stuff from all over the place, and they also get like almost like downloads, like channeled material, and they're somewhat prophetic because, you know, it's relevant. I mean, there's no like accident there, right? I mean, there's so many connections. So we're seeing this happen before our eyes. We are living in biblical times right now because the ancient Bible, the Jewish Bible, and the even, you know, the book of Revelation, which is, you know, at the end of the Christian Bible, is all giving us this script about the end of this age. In fact, Yeshua, okay, he you know, people know him as Jesus, but when he walked the earth, he wasn't called Yeshua. And he said he was returning at the end of the age. Okay, so that was very point blank. Okay, but he's not the only one that's returning at the end of the age. There's the other gods are returning at the end. It's a divine appointment. Yes, go ahead, Jer.
Well, I just think we're running out of time, so I just wanted to have a chance you've been, it's been quite the download. And I'm not saying everything we agree with. It seems to be quite a few differences there. I think the main thing I would take away is that the masters have given us a message of peace. So even if you're attacked, you know, even if you've been murdered and raped and attacked, you don't attack back. You are under no violence. It's a very peaceful message from the cosmic masters. So that's something I might question a little bit with what you were saying. Does that
well, resonate? You know, that is a great ideal, and I love that. I embrace peace, but there are actors, characters in this whole end time scenario that are just the opposite. They are going to fight tooth and nail until they get their goal, whether it's to obliterate a race of human beings or to defend themselves. And that's just the raw reality of our human.
But you don't think thou shalt not kill is uppermost?
Oh, I agree. I do not agree with killing. I'm absolutely for peace. I'm detached from all of that, and I look at it and say, well, these are actors that are playing roles that is written into a script. Okay, then the script is the prophecies, and they are just like you can pontificate and say, well, you know, is it self-fulfilled prophecy? I don't think so. I think that these are ancient gods, ETs. Okay, people call the ETs gods, but they are extraterrestrials, and they are fighting over who and gets to control planet Earth, and that is the end time war. So there will be a lot of killing. There will be a lot of bloodshed. But it's not just the guerrilla stuff, you know, the ugly stuff that goes on. That, you know, there's a whole nother thing. And I don't want to leave you guys without you telling you this. This is another piece. This is one of probably the only.
Well, maybe we'll have to do that next time because I think we have run out of time. And
Is this system the Nemesis Nibiru system, which is passing the Earth?
All right, save it. I don't want to ruin the next episode because people.
Oh, okay, sure.
You know, that's just so exciting. But I just want to leave people with that doesn't really tie in with our teachings. We're all about peace and you know, the next master's coming, but we're about praying that it doesn't happen. The next master doesn't come, and that the sorting doesn't come. We're all about praying for peace, and that's the message that we get from the masters is that you know, we're in charge of our own karma, and we're involved enough as it is, and we need to pray for peace. So maybe that's just what I want to leave.
I say amen to that. Yes. Amen. And Yeshua taught peace, and he's coming to resolve all this.
Yeah. Let's,
and then his whole, for all the whole, celestial armies.
Right. Well, where can people find out more about you?
I'm at whoshointhecosmiczoo.com. And I'm also on Amazon, worldwide channels. You can find my books. There's 5 in the book series. I have book 6 coming out in 2024 called Heaven's Witness. So kind of.
Okay. Wow. You're a machine. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's brilliant. Thank you so much, Ella. And if people want to learn more about the Aetherius Society, they can go to aetherius.org. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks, Ella. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.